Up to Rambam Hilchot Melachim Perek Bet Halacha Hey. So a melech mistaper b'chol yom. A king gets a haircut daily. Umitaken atzmo minayev in levushin b'fuarin, and he dresses up, makes himself look good in beautiful clothes. Shne emar, because the pasuk says in Yeshayahu, melech b'yofyo techazen einecha. The king in glory, you shall see him. Yoshev al kisei malchut bepaltarin shelo. He sits on his throne in his palace. Who makes him keter b'rosho, and he puts a crown on his head. V'kol ha'am b'ayin elav beit shiratzeh. And people come before him. Omdim lefanav u'mishtachavim arzeh. And they bow. Afilu navi omeid lefnei ha'melech u'mishtachav alo arzeh. Even a navi bows on the ground to the king, shenamar. As we see by Natan, Hinei Natan Navi, Vayavol Lefnei HaMelech, Vayishtachu LaMelech Ala Pavartza, that when Natan came to David, he bowed. Avol Kohen Gadol, Eino Ba Lefnei HaMelech, Ela Im Ratzav, Eino Omid Lefanav, Ela Melech Omid Lefnei Gadol Gadol. But the Kohen Gadol only comes if he wants to, and then the king stands before him. Shenemer Lefnei Elazar Kohen, Yamod Vishalo, Avol Bichein, Mitzvah Kohen Gadol, Lechabin HaMelech Oshiva. Right, so here you see this interesting balance, which is that even though the Kohen Gadol and the king stand before the Kohen Gadol, it's a mitzvah for the Kohen Gadol to honor the king, that he should stand for him. The only time that the king actually stands for the Kohen Gadol is if he's actually asking a question from the Urim V'Tumim. And the king is also commanded to honor those who study Torah. Kishin Kansu Lefanav Sanhedrin Chachmei Israel. So when the Sanhedrin, the other wise people come, Ya'amod Lefnei Yoshem Vitzido, he stands in front of them, he seats them to his side. V'chenaya Asa Amelech Yehuda Osa Afilu Tamid Chachamim. This is what Asa did, I omed Mikiso, he would stand up in Menashko and kiss them, V'korelo Rebbe Mari, and say, Rebbe, my teacher, Bamedvar Mamur, my master, Bamedvar Mamurim, Anji Amelech Beveitol Vadohu V'avadav. But this is only if the king is alone or with his private staff. But in public, he can't do this. He can't stand for anybody. He can't speak gently. And she should only refer to people by name, not by title. So that his fear will be by everybody. Okay, there's a lot to unpack in this halacha. So let's try to take it piece by piece. So first of all, the notion that he gets a haircut every day appears twice in Shas, but in Sanhedrin Chav Bet and in Tanit Daf Yud Zayin. What do you learn from that? Right. So what? But right, so right. I mean, so, right. It's not so complicated, but what you see is right. Until now, we've been talking about the fact that people have to honor the king. This is where we start to see that part of the fact that people have to honor the king means the king has to go out of his way to look like a king. Right, that it works both ways. That it's not just that people have to honor him; he has to engender. He has to actively do his best to engender that honor, which is not obvious. Right, it's not obvious that that would be the case. It could just be you're obligated to honor him. Right, the fact that. And what does that imply? I think that implies partially that you're not honoring just the person. You're honoring, like, the office, right? Because it was just him. So you'd say, listen, people have to honor him, and they don't, I mean, you know, or whatever, but it's not his responsibility. But when you say, no, they have to honor him, and he has to go out of his way to be impressive, right? You're saying, right, that there's a... Exactly. Now, this has other halachic implications. Such that the on Yom Kippur, right, you find this at the end of Yom, the Rambam Paskin, the Shvita Asor, that even though you're not allowed to wash your face on Yom Kippur, a king is. Right? A king and a kala are allowed to. And the source is the same, that Melech b'yof yodech zeneinecha. Meaning, it's not just that he has to do it. It's object, right? There's like an objective chiyuv that on Yom Kippur, right, the Pasuk doesn't say don't wash your face. Doesn't even say don't eat. It says... afflict, right? And based on that, right, that's why even eating, right? Eating the shear is not a kezayit. It's a kusevet agaza. It has to be a big fig, right? Because it has to be something that'll make you, it's not normal eating. It's don't eat in service of inui. But that also comes with kula, other kulot, such as if you're doing one of the other things not to minimize, you know, physical suffering, but for some other halachic purpose, then it's mutter. So this is one of those expressions. He's not washing his face because he wants to wash. He's doing it because he's the king. He has to look a certain way. And as the Meiri puts it in Tainit, Melech ra'ui lo shitayer biofi v'lo yira atzmo b'shum nivol. He has to present himself in beauty, and there shouldn't be any nivol, no degradation, no disgustingness. Chidei shelo yakel moroklo, to not lighten his awe and reverence. M'neze amru melech mistaper b'chol yo. Now, Rabbi Rinovich notes that despite this, the Ralbag makes the point that you don't think that the main point is the king should be beautiful, right? That's not true. He says, "Lohodia ki ein malat adam lukuchame ayofi." The ein maroshim kal. Now, by the way, the idea that you should be physically impressive. Those of you who learned Shmuel with me know that that's the first thing you know about Shaul is that he's a full head taller than anybody else, right? He's good looking, he's tall, he's impressive. According to the Gemara, he invites flirting. He's so good looking. Right, I show the guys, this is one of the funniest Gemaras, right? But the first time he Shaul appears, there's this pasuk that just repeats itself over and over where these young women are telling him. I think this whole conversation goes around in circles. And Shmuel says, yeah, it's because he was so good looking, the women were flirting with him. So they're just talking random chatter. Right, so the first thing we know is that he's really good looking. But remember, as Ralbag says, that doesn't mean that that's all it is. Hence, Avshalom was really good looking. Adonia was really good looking, but that didn't work out well, right? Avshalom, and even by David was not the best looking of his brothers, right? To the point where Shmuel has to say to David, "Al tabeta mareyu vel gol kol vatav." Don't look at his beauty and his height, right? Because Shmuel was convinced it wasn't David, right? So there is this balance where, on the one hand, yes, obviously you should be physically impressive, but you shouldn't be led to think that is, right, the be-all and end-all of being, you know, being a king.
Very anti-aesthetic.
It's not anti-aesthetic at all. Ralbag is. No, this is pro-aesthetic.
Pro-aesthetic?
Aesthetic.
No, I'm saying, I said aesthetic.
Oh, I thought you said aesthetic. Yeah, I was like, no, pro-aesthetic, no, anti-aesthetic.
No. Like, a lot of cultures.
Correct.
And I think even Orthodox cultures, they think their leaders are like exceedingly humble and thus they don't care about their looks.
So this is unique to the king, though, right? Right. We should be clear about this.
Right, right.
You
don't think it's...
Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? Meaning Kohen Gadol, yes. King, yes. But that's because their office, they have to be impressive. It's not necessarily the case of Talmud Chacham. Right? A Talmud Chacham has to be clean. Right? A Talmud Chacham is not allowed to go out with, like, dirty clothes. Right. And he's Chayv Mita, B'Dishmayim, if he does. Yeah, now the notion that he should have beautiful clothes, so Rabinovich notes is Yerushalmi, right? Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin Bet Vav, that Rechanina Salak Gabe Reb Yudin Nasiyah, but that's by the Nasi, right? That's your point, that it has the same expression. Nafak Lugabe Lavush Utinite, he was wearing some sort of dirty clothes. Amarle Chazor Velavush Lagain, please go back. Put on some clean clothes. Mishum Melech Biafyote Chazena Inecha. Right, so. Right. I mean, everyone should wear clean clothes, right? The king seems to be more than that. Right, and then the notion of sitting on a throne, even though often when you see sitting on a throne, it means more like you will inherit the post. But at some level, obviously, right, if you look at Shlomo, the pasuk goes out of his way to tell you just how impressive his throne was, right? With the six shesh ma'alot lakisei, right? His six stairs and these golden statues, right? So, right, if you read Tanakh, then in fact, the notion that his throne is part of that, of what's impressive, that's, you know, that's very, very clear. Um, right, the notion of his of his crown. Right, obviously, this is obviously something that's reflected in many places. Then things get a little bit more complicated, though, right? So, okay, the fact that everyone should bow to him, again, that's well established. But the balance here, right, is very interesting, that the Navi, right, the Navi has to bow to him, right? But he stands to the Kohen Gadol, but only if he's asking a question, the Arum V'tumim, and he has to be Mechamid Tamid Chachamim, but not in public. Right, this is where things start to get very complicated. I mean, what's the logic, right, behind that particular compromise? Yeah, but in public he doesn't, right? He only is allowed, he has to show deference. Meaning what, right? So again, right, this is where, right, you have to distinguish, right, that there's the intrinsic honor and then there's here part of his obligations we see is perception, which means that, yes, on the one hand, if Talmid Chacham come in private, so he has to recognize God is above him, and they represent Torah. But in public, right? But in public, he can't do that. He's not allowed to call them rabbi. Why not? What does it mean, mistaken? It's not going to be mistaken. It's because the public needs to respect him, right? It's not the respect of the office. It's not the respect of the office, right? At the end of the day, in your private life, right? In his private life, ki'ilu, so he can respect them. But in public, right? It's right, we all understand this, that, like, the you know, look, it was like, you know, when my brother-in-law was telling me that when his father was knighted, right, you get, like, training. He's the chief rabbi of England, right? But you get training, right? Like, this is when you go into be knighted, right? This is how you stand. This is how you bow. This is, yeah, right? Like, for the knighting ceremony, right, we all understand there's very strict protocol. Right, at that point, he may be the chief rabbi, and maybe in private he'll show him honor. Right, but here he is the king. You follow protocol, right? You right. He puts the sword, the whatever. Right, there is this idea. Right, and by the Kohen Gadol again, it's very interesting. Right, what does it say? He only stands the Kohen Gadol when he's asking him the Urim V'Tumim. Right, meaning when the same way we saw that the king, you respect him in terms of his post. So the Kohen Gadol. Right, the king only sort of lowers himself if he's asking of the Urim V'Tumim, because then it's in his post, and this is also like, this is a formal ritual act, where the king asks God. And not everyone's allowed to ask God in that sense, right? So this balancing act...
when the king consults the Urim V'Tumim?
Yeah, when the king... he asked the Kohen Gadol to consult it on his behalf. So then he stands for the Kohen Gadol. But that makes sense, because that's like, right?
Can you explain the previous sentence? I don't understand it. It's saying that the high priest should honor the king by standing for him?
The king has to stand for the Kohen Gadol when he's asking the from the Urim V'Tumim.
The sentence before that is...
Yeah.
That means that when the high priest visits the king, I'm just confused by the
right. Problem. If he comes to. Well,
I'm confused by the pronouns here. I'm not clear.
Meaning, it doesn't matter who visits who. The main point is that the king is. If the king is consulting the Urim V'Tumim, he has to honor the Kohen Gadol. If he's not, then the Kohen Gadol has to honor him. Right?
Meaning... The previous sentence is saying that if the high priest...
Like, if the Kohen Gadol comes to the king, yeah. Presumably he has to stand. He has to honor him. But if the king comes to the Kohen Gadol to consult the Urim V'Tumim, then the Kohen Gadol is the one being respected.
Right?
It makes sense, right? Meaning, they're functioning in different roles.
Right?
Depending on the context. Now... I would support this by the fact that, remember, the halacha is, if you look at the Rambam Klei HaMikdash, the Rambam says, Ketzad Sholem, how do you ask? Omer HaKohen u'panav l'fnei Aaron, v'shol me'acharav panav l'acharei HaKohen, ve'ein nishalim ba'en lehed yod. Right? A regular person isn't allowed to ask the Urim V'Tumim. Meaning, it's not like anyone can do this. This is a formal monarchical thing. It's O Melech O Leveitin. O L'shad Tzibur Tzarchlo. There are three people who can ask the Urim V'Tumim. The king, the Sanhedrin, or anybody who at that point represents a need of the people. right? So when the king is asking for the Urim and Tumim, this is a formal act of like the king in he's subservient to God, right? So obviously at that point, it flips, right? The Kohen Gadol as a person has to respect the king, but the Kohen Gadol is representing God. Well, the king has to respect God. Let's see. Right now, there's a. Right now, again, this balance with Talmidei Chachamim also is very interesting. Right, the idea that he must respect Torah, right? But again, in public, right, they need to respect the. Right, the whatever you want to call it, the office, whatever. This balance between Sina and Farhesia is also very interesting, right? It's very, it's a hard thing to define, right? I mean, the Rambam's compromise, because the king is never really alone. Right, so the Rambam comes up with this compromise that it depends that if he's only there with like his officers, right, like his intimate circle, so that's considered private enough, which is interesting, right? Because the people in his private circle, like his servants, are sometimes the people who have to show the most deference to him, right? They're the most okay. It's also interesting, right, that he's not really allowed to speak, right, sort of like too nicely, right? There is a certain formality that he needs to have in terms of how he speaks. Let's see, what else is worth covering here? I sent this out a few weeks ago, they added the Rishimot Shirim of the Rav on Al Seder HaRambam. The Rav had like his notes written up. So I'll just finish, I guess, the Rav. So he focuses on the Talmud Chacham point. This comes from the Gemara in Ketubot Kof Gimel that Nichnas Rav Gimel Etzlo Masel Lesidrin Nesiyud Amar Lo Bini Noeg Nesiyot Chobir Amim Zrok Mara L'Tamidim. Right. So this whole idea of Sina Farasya comes from this Gemara, right? That he says, my son. Right, act as, you know, respect being the nasi, zrok mara l'tamidim, which is throw bitterness to the tamidim, right? Be a little bit sharp with your students. Eini v'aktivit yirei Hashem yichabed, v'amamar mar ze yoshafat melech yidak, sh'arro ha-tamid chacham ha-omin v'kizom v'chavko v'min ha-shko v'koro lo Rebbe Mari. Right, he says, well, is that true? Right? The king used to stand for tamid chacham. How is he telling him, the nasi, which stands in the king, that he should be harsh? So the more answers, abit lo kash, abit sin, abit farhesya, meaning, right, that's where he gets this from. That in public, so the Talmid Chacham honor the king, in private, the king honors the Talmid Chacham. Now, the Rashi there says, "Matalem emalo dia nisiato." He puts his fear on them to make it clear that he is the nasi. Mashma da nasi matalem ema b'farase eno miikra inyan malchor nesiut. So he says, from Rashi, it sounds like it's more like making it known that he is the Nasi. Which makes it sound like he could be mochel on it. But the Rambam, it's clear that you can't. It's not a technicality. It's me'ikur din ha-malchut. Right? That in public, fundamentally, there's a different manifestation of honor. You can't do it. Right? Right? So it must be and near Levard is that Pashut Shema Melachai Mid Mushum Shikil Shabim Khadom, etc. Okay, then he brings in the issue of Dina Nafasho. Very briefly, right? He notes in Tosfot, Tosfot asked, how did they tell Yanai, stand up, right? It was in public. And Tosfot said, so one answer is that really the kavod of Talmidei Chachamim is greater than that of the king, Except the Rambam makes it sound not that way. So he says it must be the Rambam holds b'dinei nefashot gam melacham tamid chacham tzrichim la'amod. The reason they told Yanai in this court case to stand up was because that's the objective halacha. V'nir levard zeh pashut shema melacha yechayev mita mishum shechil shabbat v'chadom ha'edin la'amito k'shabani adam. He says that makes sense. At a courthouse, right, when the king is on trial, so yeah, he would have to stand up because he is subject to the law like anybody else, right? But fundamentally, Tosfot and the Rambam must hold that no, whose kavod is more? At a certain level, the king's is actually fundamentally greater. That's how he reads it. I'm not totally convinced of this, but okay. Anyways, there's a lot that can be done in this halacha, but let's stop here. Fine.